Red 5, standing by.
Stay on target.
Lost Tyree, lost Hutch. It came from behind! Ow!
Alright, so if we're doing the trench run, which one of us is getting blown up first?
Really? Really? Do we need to ask who Porkins is? Really? You're just gonna just... you.
I didn't say which one of us was Porkins. I said which one of us is getting blown up first.
Oh, damn, right?
So I guess you're Biggs because you got the mustache, right?
Hey, I've had a mustache for, like, coming up on 40 years.
When you came out of the womb.
I had that little pencil-thin high school mustache that everybody hates when they see. Because that was all I could grow. Then I graduated up to the porn stash. And then from there over to the Cisco.
This is my goatee.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert. All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers. Now start acting like it.
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax. We might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, the Deep Space Nine good show. I don't know.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been. It's been a while, and we've spent so much time just chewing the fat that my mind is not focused. But we're here just reviewing every episode one by one of the great Star Trek show, Deep Space Nine. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here with my usual cohorts. We've got Sir Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
Dr. Bill Robinson.
I think I broke my leg.
And J. David Weider.
I climb a mountain because it's there.
What are you, Kirk?
If only.
Well, gravity boots would have come in handy.
Perhaps because it's there is not a good reason.
Row, row, row your boat. No, sorry.
Row, row, row. Oh, okay.
Now, some people love...
The whole episode's them singing,
some people love row, 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 row your boat. You know, I gotta say, that was one effect that William Shatner added to it that actually did make him seem drunk. The way he said it when it first came out.
I was gonna say, are you sure that he wasn't drunk?
I'm not. I don't know. As far as I know, they could have been really drinking, you know, whatever that was that he put in the beans.
Now look, Star Trek V, it's got good qualities to it.
There's things about that movie that I enjoy very much. I'm not criticizing the movie. I'm
just saying, that movie a lot, man.
You too, because you do need your pain.
And then Bill broke a bottle and started stabbing people. I need my pain. I need my pain.
Show me your pain, Dave.
You made it sound creepy.
Come on, Cybok was creepy.
You're creepier than
he was the Laughing Vulcan. What are you talking about?
That sounds like a bar. The Laughing Vulcan.
It does.
Welcome to Cybox, home of the Laughing Vulcan. Get the out.
So, although we produce an episode...
Poison in a bar is not logical.
Although we post an episode every 2 weeks, it's actually been like over a month since we've recorded together.
Oh, it's been more than that.
Yeah, it's been more.
I want to say it's
been... Andy's been off in Scotland.
Andy's been on... What is it? Andy's been on holiday.
London.
Yeah, London.
I think there was...
You've been around places, Paul?
Paul's been in Florida.
I have been in Florida.
So has Bill, but that's not up.
I'm always here.
He was left here by the old ones.
Ruck. That's me.
But I'll have you know, I've been holding down Missouri. We're good here.
Excellent.
Long Island is in a state of flux right now.
We've triangulated the United States, gentlemen. Next, Europe. Andy's our point man. Oh, sorry. I don't know where that came from.
I don't either.
Too much caffeine.
So since it's been so long, what Star Trek news do we have? We've recently had a new Spock cast, And I'm not talking. I'm not talking about a podcast. I'm talking about in Discovery.
We discussed the Pike casting before, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Yeah.
We discussed it so long ago that it's already posted.
Didn't we discuss number one?
We talked about it offline. I mean, we were messaging each other.
Bill talks about number one on the air too often.
So Rebecca Romijn's. I almost said Stamos.
She's Rebecca Romijn O'Connell now, isn't she?
I thought it was Rebecca Romijn Lettuce.
You stole my joke, you son of a...
She is going to be number one. I reserve judgment. She's not who I would cast to be Majel Barrett, but she's got the blue eyes, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So I
think she could pull it off. She's genuinely excited about it.
Yeah, I like Rebecca Romijn, don't get me wrong. I think she's very good in The Librarians. She was a good Mystique. But let's be honest, the person who plays Mystique doesn't really have to do much other than look good naked. She manages quite well.
I couldn't play the part.
Yeah, see, so none of us would be any good at it. And she's a good Lois Lane in the Superman Death of Superman video that just came out. I know nothing about the guy who plays Spock other than he's... Whose grandson is he? Is it Clark
Gable? Gregory Peck. Yeah.
Thank you. I knew he was acting royalty. But somebody did post on Twitter the picture of him the minute that he got the text saying, "Welcome aboard, Mr. Spark." And it's just such an adorable picture of him. He's just like leaning against a wall because he can't support himself having got the news. It's a really lovely photo. And then there's another one of him with Adam Nimoy and Terry Farrell. So,
And Adam's sister. So the Nimoy family stamp of approval's on this guy.
I can't help but wonder if, it's been a month since we recorded, so I don't remember people's names. Who's been given the showrunner job now? They fired off the two people who were apparently off.
Kurtzman?
Is it Alex Kurtzman?
Kurtzman,
apparently has a deal in place, I think we may have discussed this before, to do a number of different Star Trek shows for the streaming platform. They've already announced the Picard one, which is quite interesting. Patrick Stewart's coming back. I can't help but wonder that with all these announcements for Pike, number one, and Spock, are we getting a Captain Pike series? Because this seems like an awfully big deal for a one-off appearance in Discovery.
I agree. I really hadn't considered that. I hadn't been thinking about it that much. But that does seem like an awful lot to go through. It's a little risky. So I think to take that risk, you have to have the potential of a bigger payoff. And an actual series would be a potentially big payoff.
I mean, I wonder if they're testing the waters with their appearance in Discovery with a view to, all right, these guys have been well received. Let's spin them off into their own 6-10 episode show. But I think these announcements have been considerably... There's been a lot of hoopla around these announcements for a guest appearance in a TV show.
Well, as far as I knew, I thought they were going to be around for at least a large chunk of the season. Probably the front half, if I had to guess.
But then it's not Discovery, is it? It's Enterprise.
We don't know what Discovery is defined as outside of the first season. Because certainly DS9, Next Gen weren't defined by their first seasons.
I don't know. I just think that the way they've been handling this and the way they've been doling it out slowly. Yeah. That's very true. I mean,
I love the early Voyages comic books, so yeah, bring it on. So bring on Captain Pike, and apparently Captain Kirk is on his way out.
What do you mean?
Because Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth have apparently dropped out of Star Trek.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, for contract issues.
So that could be worked out if they... they're out for now.
Well, I've got a solution to that. Very easy solution.
Give them more money.
Pay them the money, because that was a deal that was in place. Do a better job of marketing your movie and license it better. Because if you look at the 2009 Star Trek, the toys were crap. For Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond, there were no toys. Market it to get the license to a good, reputable company who's going to pay well for it, and you've already offset it. Boom. Give me a call.
You couldn't have said this 40 years ago. If you wanted to have a successful movie, you got to make good toys for the middle-aged people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, one of the quotes...
Funny because it's true.
One of the quotes I read about that I thought was... I don't want to say it was insulting, but my first instinct was like, really? You're going to say that? Was that they were asking, the money they were asking, that the response back from the studio was, well, we're talking about a Star Trek movie, so, like it's... okay, it's still a movie, but, oh, well, yeah, but we're not going to pay as much because it's a Star Trek movie. And I was just like, really? That's kind of, you know.
Well, it's an ensemble film. That would be my take on that.
Oh, okay. I guess I took it the wrong way. But, I mean, I wasn't, like, you know, enraged and incensed and, you know, ranting around. But I was just kind of
Bill was enraged, so he ripped a little less. you know the rest.
The thing I read, that they had been offered a pay rise, and Paramount were now saying they weren't willing to pay them that pay rise. It weren't that they're asking for more money. They were for the money that was agreed upon. And on the one hand, they're paid far more than I'll see in a lifetime, so suck it up, Buttercup, and get on with your job. But on the other, if that is what was agreed, then fine. If this isn't Pine and Hemsworth wanting more money, only what there was agreed upon, then Paramount should pay that. It's as simple as that. But at the same time, I wouldn't be overly upset if we didn't get a fourth Kelvinverse movie. I was never happy with recasting those characters anywhere. I mean, I accept that it's happening now. We're having a third Mr. Spock. But at the same time, Star Trek Beyond was so very, very good. And I don't want them to fuck it up and do a fourth one that's not very good.
Yeah, I haven't had that much of a problem with the Kelvinverse. There's definitely things I would have done differently, and we've gone on about that. I don't feel there's any need to start repeating them. But I would have liked to have gotten a fourth movie, just because, exactly like you say, I feel like they were on the right track. I really enjoyed the last one. I would have liked to have squeezed one more in before we got to start this all over again.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll still happen. I think that they will come to an agreement.
But like what I think the key is, I want, you know, it's not going to be good if they don't have a good script. So I have no idea what they're filming and, you know, what they want to film. So, you know, in some ways they could be doing us a favor if they don't make the movie, because maybe they're going to do something that's going to outrage everybody and piss everybody off.
Yes, see, and as you're in a situation here where you've employed stars in your movies instead of actors. I'm not saying Chris Pine isn't a good actor. He is. But at the same time, Chris Pine doesn't need Star Trek the same way William Shatner did.
Chris Pine wasn't a star in 2009 when Star Trek came out. He's become a star since then.
He was a known quantity. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
I think Spock was the most well-known of the people.
Those actors need Star Trek.
Yeah, no, you know what? By the time they got to Star Trek III, William Shatner didn't really need Star Trek anymore either.
No, he had T.J. Hooker going on, didn't he? And I think of all of them, Shatner's had the most visible career outside of Star Trek. I mean, arguably, Shatner's most defining role is Denny Crane.
Well, I don't know about most defining. It's probably closest to his real personality, though.
Very true, yeah.
But, he's definitely had the most prolific career of all the Star Trek actors.
Anyway, all right then. Shall we get on to this episode of Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, we are here today to do Season 5, Episode 9, The Ascent.
Two bitter rivals.
I've been waiting 10 years for you to get what you deserve.
Must face a deadly confrontation.
It's a bomb.
Marooned on a barren world.
We either freeze to death, starve to death.
Two enemies.
What do you hate?
You have just one chance at survival.
I'm dying!
Each other on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
It originally aired on November 25th, 1996. We have a sparse guest cast of Max Grodnicek as Rom and Aaron Eisenberg as Nog. What do we got here? It's directed by Alan Croker, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf. And that's about it. The story goes like this. Odo is dispatched to escort Quark to a Federation grand jury hearing, an 8-day journey away. Halfway to their destination, Quark hears a strange buzzing noise. When he and Odo investigate, they find a bomb planted by the Orion Syndicate aboard the runabout. They contain the explosion in a transport beam, but the runabout is still severely damaged. Forced to crash land on a frozen, desolate planet, Odo and Quark learn that they lost their communication system, their replicator, and most of their rations in the explosion. They are left facing a horrifying choice: starve to death or freeze to death. When Quark has an idea, taking the runabout subspace transmitter, he suggests they haul the heavy piece of equipment up an enormous mountain where the atmosphere may be thin enough to send a signal for help. Sharing one set of cold weather gear between them, they make their way towards the mountain, bickering all the way. Quark is ready to give up when Odo encourages him with an estimate of 6 hours before reaching the top of the mountain. But Odo is wrong. As they clear the trees, they come to the edge of a steep cliff overlooking a deep valley. The mountain is actually days away. With no other choice, Quark and Odo make their way down into the valley towards the mountain. The pair argues throughout the journey, even as they finally begin to climb the mountain. Words soon escalate into a shoving match, and they wind up sliding down the mountainside. While Quark is unhurt, Odo's leg is broken. Quark tries to drag Odo up the mountain, but it soon proves too much work for him. Odo insists that Quark leave him behind and continue alone to the top, but Quark, exhausted and hungry, is ready to give up. After Odo tries to take the transmitter himself, broken leg and all, Quark is shamed into resuming his attempt, but when night falls, Odo is still alone. Assuming that Quark failed to reach his goal and died, Odo prepares to do the same. He is suddenly transported off the mountain. He finds himself on the USS Defiant, where Bashir, Dax, and Worf inform him that Quark indeed made it to the top and was able to signal for help. The longtime adversaries return to Deep Space Nine with an uncomfortable new aspect to their relationship, the fact that Quark saved Odo's life. Meanwhile, on Deep Space Nine, Nog returns to the station for his field study. He moves in with Jake Sisko and the two conflict. Nog has become overly neat, has lost his sense of fun, and looks down upon Jake's more relaxed attitude towards life, cleanliness, and exercise. They eventually reconcile, thanks to the efforts of their fathers, Benjamin Sisko and Rom. They could have just played the Odd Couple background music through this whole episode, as far as I was concerned. It was both the plot and the subplot. Then, like, when they're going up the mountain, you hear... I enjoyed this one. I enjoyed the character studies. I enjoyed a lot of the... just the back and forth, you know, bickering that was going on. The Quark and Odo one, the dialogue seemed more real to me than the Nog-Jake one. I guess because it was the B-plot and it was just squeezing in short spots. I think some of the dialogue seemed very forced to make the conflict that they were trying to make. But as a general rule, I enjoyed this episode. I thought this was kind of fun. I thought the backgrounds were spectacular. This was all done, on location, which apparently, adds a lot to the budget. So even though this wasn't a heavy special effects episode, I believe it was an expensive one for them to produce.
They shot it within a radius of 200 yards. It'll be okay. No, that's not a joke, by the way.
They had some issues because despite the fact that they really did a good job of making it look like they were freezing, it was apparently somewhere around 65 degrees when they were filming this, and they're wearing all this heavy gear to make it look like they're trying to keep warm. And from what I understand, René Auberjonois really, really enjoyed doing this one.
Oh, I thought you'd just say he really broke his leg. I'm like, whoa.
No, I think, he made some comments that he just enjoyed this because they were on location. They were all eating together and hanging out together, and a lot of times they didn't do that. And apparently, I guess René Auberjonois is a very social dude.
I wouldn't know what that's like.
Well, you're hiding away in Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri. Oh, really?
There's an episode of The Incredible Hulk called Mystery Man, which is essentially this episode. Dr. Banner, his face all covered because he's suffering from burns, and Jack McGee crash in a forest. Jack McGee breaks his legs. Dr. Banner has to make a sledge, and he has to carry him through the forest. Really quite interesting two-part episode, because it's a two-hander between Bill Bixby and Jack Colvin. And he, as a character, learns that the creature that he is pursuing changes into a man and vice versa. And it's a big twist on the mythology of the show. From that point on, McGee knowing a man. We don't learn anything new about Quark and Odo in this episode. They fight, they bicker, they fall out with each other, but they love each other a lot. And we learn nothing new. And because of that, I don't think this works as a story as well as it could do. Now, that's not to say it's not an enjoyable episode. The writing is really crisp. The acting between René Auberjonois and Armin Shimerman is as brilliant as it always is. But there's no bite to it. There's no revelation about the characters that we didn't already know. There's no secret that one or the other learns as a process of what they've gone through together. And as such, it falls flat because there is nothing at the end of it. They can go back to normal next week and it doesn't matter.
Like, you know what? That's one of the things about it that bothered me a little bit is, after all this happens, okay, so why isn't Quark going back to the grand jury? Why isn't he getting in trouble? Why isn't he getting arrested? You know what I mean? Although, actually, he was going to the grand jury to testify against the Orion Syndicate.
Right,
And if he's so important, why would they send him on a runabout for an eight-day journey?
Well, yeah, but why not have a starship? That was Odo's fault, because Odo didn't... He was just kind of like a little bit of hubris. He was so happy that he finally thinks, Quark is finally going to get what's coming to him. And, you know, once he found out that he was testifying against the Orion Syndicate, he's like, well, if I had known that, I would have put you on the Defiant and not a runabout. So it was kind of Odo's own fault that they were in the predicament that they were in. At least that's the way I see it.
Stupid.
Odo assumed. Mm-hmm. And when you assume,
and which it goes well with the Odd Couple music. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were, you know, they had to come up with some reason to do this. It almost feels like, hey, let's do a thing where they're stuck on a mountain. Okay, how are they going to get there? Like that's almost, it feels like they backed into the story a little bit.
Yeah,
not that that's necessarily a big negative.
Had at the end of the episode, Odo professed his love for Kira to Quark. So Quark is now suddenly on this big secret that nobody else knows. That may have been enough to give us some meat to the story. But as it is, it's just them two bickering for 40 minutes. And fun as that is to watch, it ultimately doesn't mean anything.
Is my memory wrong, or didn't Quark already...
Has Quark already twigged that?
Yeah, I thought he right. said something like, oh, we all say it, you know.
Right.
I'm
forgetting that.
I think with this episode, DS9 was competing with itself, because it's a very standard formula episode. Put these two in a remote area location, let them go at it. But to me, I think Deep Space Nine could do better with this. Like you said, we should learn something. These two should go into conflict a little bit differently. It was a filler episode. It was something I was looking forward to when I looked at the premise in the Deep Space Nine companion, but it did not fulfill what I was looking for with Odo and Quark. I mean, the way I would have played it would have been Quark's accused of a crime that Odo believes he didn't commit, risks his neck to save Quark, and in the end you find out, no, Quark did do it, but Odo can never know.
At this point in their relationship, I feel like Odo should be wanting to hold Quark in check and make sure he doesn't get involved in anything that he shouldn't or do anything that he shouldn't. But I think we've already gotten to the point where their relationship's progressed, where they're aware of how they, you know, that they do have a bond. And he shouldn't be wanting to send Quark away anymore.
Yeah, that did ring a little... yeah. It's like, the stuff you've been through so far, and now you've suddenly... It's like, were you lying before? You've just been waiting for a chance? Like, you got close to Quark just so you could screw him over? And that just seemed a little bit out of his character.
Yeah, I feel like there should be a byplay between the two, where, you know, almost like a parent-child thing, where the child's always trying to get away with something and the parent's trying to set the boundaries for him, and, you know, but the parent really doesn't want to send the child into timeout. In this, Odo wants to send him to timeout, and that's where I feel like it's not true. Because at this point, I don't think he should be wanting to send him away, send him to jail or whatever. I think he should know that deep down inside, Quark is, you know, a somewhat decent person, and, you know, like I said, he's just trying to keep him on the straight and narrow, but not necessarily trying to get him arrested. That's the way it feels to me, at least. But that premise aside, I just kind of enjoyed the byplay between the two. You know, it's two good actors getting to do just, you know, back and forth, insulting each other, and I really enjoyed that. The place where I felt like it really fell short was the B plot, because I just, like I said, it felt too forced, too contrived to me. Rom's dialogue and not Rom, I keep saying Rom. Nog's dialogue and his motivations just seemed kind of stupid.
Yeah, I couldn't stand the B plot in this. I was just like,
And then Jake was so stereotypical in the way he acted. He reminded me of Groot on the ship playing Defender. He could his dialogue could have been, I am Jake.
I am Jake. Whoa, language.
I think what they were going for was you would expect that Jake to be the one who's all, you know, prim and proper. He's the son of Starfleet, and Nog to be the slob. So I think they thought the fun of it would come from switching that around, but it doesn't come off as well as I think they wanted it to. And I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know if it's the writing. I don't know if it's the acting. It just didn't work very well.
I think it's a combination, because I thought the dialogue was not good, and I thought it wasn't done well either. So I think it's the writing and the acting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're trying to show the things to where sometimes friends change or grow apart. But yeah, it just felt bad. It was just
felt very forced and rushed.
Yeah.
And it's not the type of subplot that's worth developing over many episodes either. So,
and it really wasn't, I think, because pretty much it was resolved. It was just a one-off, and, you know, we'll move on.
So it was bad because it's rushed, and it wouldn't have been made better by making it longer and more fleshed out. So it should have just been left on the the writing room floor, realistically. It was an effort to shoehorn in something something that would complement the story that was going on between Odo and Quark.
Well, the most enjoyable part of this episode for me was when they was like the initial 5 to 10 minutes, maybe less, when they were actually on the runabout and how they were just getting on each other's nerves, and the fact that Odo is into romance novels and Quark wants to play Fizbin.
And yeah, I loved the Fizbin reference.
It's really an easy game. I can show you how to play it.
Pulled that out of his ass. He was tap dancing as fast as he could when he made up Fizbin. How has that become a proper game?
The Malkoshians, they're very inventive people. They pick things up right away. They probably created a whole mystique about it, and they probably have Fizbin tournaments now, and that's what they're known galaxy wide. Fizbin Hold'em.
They've got Fizbin Go, so it's an app. You go out and
you're frowning. But the whole, you're smacking your lips when you eat, and then he's like mocking him, going like, "That was great."
Sorry.
To me, that was the best part.
Jake stuff was just the difference in professionalism. No offense to those two actors, but Shimmerman and Aubergenois have been doing this a while, and they can probably make dialogue that doesn't perhaps work as well on the page work in the mouths of the actors. And I wonder how much of that is their professionalism as actors and how much they're given some leeway to change the words around and make it seem more realistic. Whereas maybe the other two aren't as experienced or as seasoned yet and are just trying to play what's written, and as such come across stiff rather than being allowed to rehearse it and change some words around but still get the meaning across. I don't know. I just think that the Aubergenois and Armin Shimmerman bits are much more entertaining because those two at this point could just stand in front of a blank screen and fight with each other and it would be fun.
I think they're also professional enough as actors. And again, it's not necessarily to criticize the other two, but the other two are younger, less experienced. I get the feeling that enters into it, and that the older, more experienced actors are able to kind of improv a little, or say, this doesn't sound right coming out of my character's mouth. Can we change it to this? And I don't think that the parts... I think the dialogue, premise aside, the dialogue between the older actors is much more crisp and better written than what we get from the younger actors. So I think the younger actors had a bigger challenge to try and make it sound good, and they weren't up to that, and I'm not sure that the older actors would have been able to do it either, because, like I said, they're trying to do it in a much shorter period and progress that story to its conclusion with very little time. So it just felt forced and not natural and out of character to some extent, and that aspect of the show I didn't like at all. But I did really enjoy the Odo Quark part. I thought the scenery was really good. It was a pretty episode to watch when they were showing, the different things on the mountain and everything. The cinematography was very good in it, I thought.
Yeah, I agree totally with that. I think the fact that this is on location and not on a bad soundstage set really opens the story up.
Yeah, so overall, I generally enjoyed it. There's not a lot, I don't think there's a lot to discuss as far as it made me think about this. Because there's, I don't think there's much in the way of greater questions here. The biggest point I had was that Quark, or rather Odo, probably shouldn't be so gleeful about, that he thinks he's sending Quark away. But that's not a major plot point. It's just kind of they're just developing the character a little differently than what I really kind of wish they would.
Okay. The only other thing I want to point out, it's not a spoiler, but as of this episode, you need to be paying attention to Dr. Bashir. The uniform change being a big clue.
Well, we are now in the First Contact era.
Yes.
Next episode, we go to the First Contact uniforms.
So as of here, you keep an eye on Dr. Bashir, a very close eye on him.
So keep an eye on him in this episode, too? Do I need to go back on?
This episode.
Okay.
I watched
keep a close eye on Dr. Bashir.
Keep a close eye on him. I feel like I'm remiss.
Can we
take a break? I got to watch the next episode before we record.
No. All will become clear.
Because I watched this last night, but I didn't notice anything weird about Bashir. But I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going.
I'm pretty dense. It may not become clear.
It will become clear in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes' time.
Okay, I have time. Oh, it's time enough.
It's time now. It's time to watch the episodes. It's time.
Oh. And we're all turning, looking at our companions like, hey, just make sure I'm right.
Everything turn. There is a season. Sorry, I'm interrupting the show.
I figure that's got to be like one of our transitions. Just have Andy sing.
Oh, we just introduced the Captain Scarlet bombs. Bum, 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 bum.
No, because Steven will try to sue us. I guess we should find out what Blaine says.
Yes, we should.
Look at Blaine you taking over says, the show.
Blaine says, party Dave time. Dave the producer, pull the trigger.
So Blaine says, hi guys. In the first season, I waited with bated breath for a great scene between Quark and Odo. Now an episode devoted to them feels almost off-topic. We are really moving towards an overarching, complete, coherent narrative. While this does seem to help integrate Quark into the station crew, it doesn't seem to do a whole lot else. Like some other recent episodes, this seems to be about positioning relationships more than anything else. Blaine. See, I'm going to disagree with Blaine on this one. The, by the way, newly married Blaine.
Yeah, congratulations
to Yay. Blaine and his lovely bride.
But, welcome to the party, pal.
I disagree because I don't think they're really trying to position the relationship. I think they're trying to have fun with the relationship and to just kind of go more with it. I don't think they're really doing... I don't think, as Andy has pointed out throughout our commentary, I don't think they're breaking any real new ground here. I just think they had the premise and thought this will be a fun thing to do. And I was recently listening to the Insider podcast on Better Call Saul. And Vince Gilligan, the producer, creator of Breaking Bad and the co-producer of this, of Better Call Saul, mentioned to aspiring writers, he said, you're really falling into a black hole if you say, it would be cool to have the character do this or say this, so now let me write a story that gets me to do that. He says, you know, he says, you have to do things generically. You have to let the characters develop on their own. And you know, once you kind of have your character Bible, you can't like force things upon them. He was talking more about dialogue than situations, but I think it kind of might go in this case where that is what they did. They said, this will be a cool situation to have them in. Let's just do it. So now let's come up with a reason why they have to be there.
Well, I think the movie plots, and I don't have the companion in front of me today, but it's another one of those ripped off movie plots that they've wanted to do since series one or two, and they've just never been able to get around to it. And I think Blaine's got something there with, when he says that the show's actually moved past this. Back in season two or three, this probably would have been a good episode, or better than it is now, just because of where it's positioned.
Blaine and I are on the same page on this one.
It's a very crowded page.
It was Waiting for Godot. It was a stage play, is what that was referencing.
Waiting for Gal Godot?
Yeah, I wish. I don't mind waiting a few hours for Gal Godot.
I'll wait around all day.
Oh, have you seen that clip from Conan?
You mean Conan O'Brien or the Destroyer?
Yeah, Conan O'Brien. Yeah, it's all of the cast league, and Gal Gadot screws up because English is obviously a second language, and she actually implies that her and Amy Adams slept together rather than merely spent the night together as like a slum. And Eisenberg sat in the middle of them, and his face is glorious to behold. He doesn't say a word, but his face is just like, okay. Have a look at it. It's on the internet. It's really funny. And it just makes you love her more.
I don't know if that's possible.
I was going to say exactly, yeah.
Do you want to do email?
Well, we didn't rate this episode.
I was going to say, we have to rate it first.
Rate it, yeah. Go on, then.
Okay, well, this was my episode, so I guess I get to go first on this. I had a tough time with this one, because I enjoyed it as I watched it. It was you know, fun to see the byplay between the two characters, but in its own way, it almost feels like empty calories. Like, I watched it, and it's over, and I immediately forgot about it and wanted something else. So to me, by definition, that's just a middle of the road. It's enjoyable, but it's nothing special episode, so I'm going to just give it a right in the middle 2.5.
I'm going to agree entirely. I think I have. We've got slight differences of opinion, but overall, I agree entirely with you. There's nothing wrong with it while you're watching it. Like we've said, Armin Shimerman and René Auberjonois are so entertaining that you could watch them do anything. The fact that they're slapped in this nice looking location and they just get to bicker with each other, all that's fine. I think they could have had a bit more meat to it in terms of learning something about them, but it doesn't really matter. It's the B plot that lets this one down. The Nog Jake stuff is just doesn't support its own way over the course of the show. How Sisko deals with it is well done, and it shows why he's a good father and a good captain. But overall, yeah, it's a Mars bar. Like Paul just said, it's you enjoy it while you're eating it, and then you carry on with your day, and you go, oh, I wish I'd had something more substantial for dinner. 2.5.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys with a 2.5 broken legs. Ooh, that was a ooh, yeah.
So what the other half broken leg was.
All right, Peter Griffin.
So yeah, it's I didn't really like the B plot. The A plot was good, but still, it was just like, yeah, like we're just kind of in neutral, waiting for the rest of the story to kick back in at this point.
I'm actually going to go one notch lower. I'm going to go for a 2 because I think that even this just fell just short of average. Because again, DS9's competing with itself. We can do the you know, solitude between two characters episode. It's fine if it's derivative, but I think Deep Space Nine could have done it much better than what we got. So I'm going to give it a 2.
Wow, you're a harsh taskmaster.
Well, when we had a delay in our recording, I thought, well, I should watch these closer to time, and I didn't want to watch The Ascent.
Yeah. Because there was an extra rewatch with this for me as well, because I think I watched it, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and it's like, oh, I gotta watch it again, really?
So I guess that's it for The Ascent, and now we'll move on to some email. What do we got, Andy?
That's all he signed it as, John. We've covered some of this before, but we left the last paragraph because he talks about The Ascent, which obviously we hadn't watched at the time he sent the email. The episode is so entertaining from top to bottom. Oh, sorry, John. All the dialogue throughout is fantastic, and Quark and Odo play so well off of each other. There was also some great universe references with the Orion Syndicate and Fizbin, a completely fictional game that Captain Kirk made up on the spot back in a piece of the action. What a fantastic nod to the original series. As great as the Quark Odo stories, I think the Jake Nog story doesn't get enough credit. This is also just as fun with Sisko playing mediator. Nog is so attached to his schedule and routine, it's great. For two essentially supporting characters, they carry the B story just as well as the regulars do the A story.
Clearly we disagree, but I just want to say we always respect other opinions. John, just because we didn't really like that doesn't mean any... It's no reflection on you, my friend.
No, and I think that in an episode where we have all essentially been in agreement that the B-plot didn't really float our boat, to get an email that says, actually, I loved that B-plot. I like that. I always like that. I think that helps with the show, and it shows that, you know, we're not the be-all and end-all authority on these things. If you enjoyed this episode, fair play to you. So it was nice to get that. And honestly, I read before, so the bit where John talks there about making Fizbin up out of his ass, I said exactly the same thing earlier. That's pure coincidence, so thank you for that, John. Our is call to arms. It's Faith Gillen again. Hello, Faith. Hello, Niners. That was nice. This episode moves so fast, I don't think I'd noticed it before, but sound is covered. Hey, Rengi and Betazoids have a sort of similar tradition. Maybe Lita could just tell Rom that if she's going to be naked, then he has to be too. Nobody wants to see that, Faith. By the way, I have been wedding dress shopping, cue dramatic shuddering, and there are more than 183 different dresses in every store, let alone the entire Alpha Quadrant. So I personally think Garrett was just done with this whole thing. I did not know wedding dresses in the world. Oh, look, Catwoman had a very nice wedding dress in Batman recently. Am I the only one who has trouble liking Zayal? I have issues with Zayal's character because they seem to not only change actresses, but personalities dramatically. This, of course, isn't any of their faults, but it is hard to get to know when it's a different character every time. Up until this actress, anyway. This is the Zayal I like the best, possibly because this is the one they stuck with. She has a lot of innocent charisma, and we actually get to know how she thinks and sees the world. How much press Sisko talk to Jake about the article? I am my facility blogger internal social media person, more on this later, and if I had written anything about my director or management without telling them I was quoting them, I would have the boom dropped on me. Thankfully, Sisko is his dad and not his boss. I love that Sisko has learned the rules of acquisition, probably so he can better deal with Quark, but it makes for some fun moments with other characters also. Another efficient and productive briefing meeting. I will never stop loving these. I wonder if job has someday they will become this good. Yeah, my meetings at work suck as well. Maybe 300 years from now. Oh, my. Ayun's scenes never disappoint. Jittery is my new favourite word for now. I think at this point we all wish that Garrick had killed Ducat. Of course, Garrick would have shot him in the back, Odo. He's an assassin who cares about the bigger picture, not the way history will remember him personally. I do kind of feel for Ducat, though. Yes, he totally sold out his people for a monument, but it is obvious from this point forward that he really thought he would be given more free rein than he actually gets. He's already pushing at his restrictions. Insta-power comes with great costs. I cringe every time Jake talks through his decision to stay on DS9. He really didn't think this through, but it is admirable all the same. I really like how Weyoun inspects the baseball like some artifact when he sees Ducat holding it. Great body language choice. My favourite part is the closing shot of the Defiant joining their fleet. I would have been so pumped if I had watched these when they were released. I keep forgetting that they closed the season with that and everyone had to wait several months to find out what happens next. I hate just waiting till the next day to watch the next episode. Great episode in my opinion. Can't wait to hear what you guys say about it, Faith. Pause to answer previous comments that you guys have probably forgotten. I mentioned in my very first email that I work in a warehouse virtually by myself for long stretches of time. Andy and Bill felt this sounded a bit sketchy. By the way, thank you for the serenade, Bill. Yes, it sounds sketchy. The fact that I actually work for the government doesn't make it sound any better. To clarify, I work for the National Archives, lots and lots of paper storage. I said warehouse because it was easier to say than warehouse-sized caves. I work underground, which also sounds sketchy. This also explains my love of watching briefing meetings. We have a lot of meetings, and I wouldn't say they are pointless, but not this good. Thank you, Faith.
I personally think working for the government in caves sounds very cool.
And yeah, I'm picturing the Lost Ark of the Covenant being tucked away.
Yeah, stole my thing. I was going to say, and now I see Faith rolling down the Ark of the Covenant down a hallway.
What's that over there, Faith?
I describe Faith as a top emailer.
And now, yeah, now she has a theme. Bum, ba-da-ba-da-da-da-da-da. It's Fate's email.
It's the other one. It's
Fate's email. Fate's email. It's a new email from Fate.
That's horrible.
Faith.
My exact thought was it's too early. It's too early,
and that too easily turns into the love scene, the love theme from Star Wars instead of Raiders.
Can you read my mind?
Can you read my email? Can you read my email?
Anybody listen to us besides us?
I don't know. I think Dave is probably thinking at this point, just get on with it.
No?
Go on, who's doing the next
email?
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
So, what do we got? We got, what's next? I don't even know.
To some's email.
Some on the quickening? Yeah. Right, I'll take that one. Which again, Tissum is Ben.
There could be only one.
So Ben says, how are you, gentlemen? We're good, thank you.
We're good, yeah, not bad.
Thank you for asking. Since you had a nice difference of opinions about the quickening, I'm going to side with Paul on this one. This may be an email for the ages. I think it's a solid episode.
What's up for this week?
Next time!
You guys just hate that you're wrong. I think it's a solid episode.
I wasn't wrong. I wasn't even on that episode.
I didn't even eat the salmon mousse.
And lasagna.
Anybody who gets that reference, I tip my hat to you.
I'm not even supposed to be here.
I'm going to side with Paul on this one. I think it's a solid episode that mixes Bashir character study and effective medical drama, all those people dying in agony because they decided to take a chance on our hero, and I wish it got a little more love. Extra credit for the way the Kevorkian-like character serves as an antagonist who's not really a villain, sort of a DS9 specialty. Depending on what sort of mood I'm in, the ending can occasionally make me tear up, but for the record, the only episode of any Trek show that can do that consistently for me is Hard Time. I can't resist linking a video. This was an internet meme at the time the video was posted, and still makes me smile. You have to know the meme in question to get it, but in case one of you does, there's a YouTube video where it's the episode in brief, and I don't know if the audio on it is worth trying to cut out and put in there, and I will leave that to the producer if we decide to do that. Best, Ben. Thank you, Ben, for agreeing with me, but of course that is the obvious way to go, because it's the only intelligent answer. Of course, as we've talked about so many times, you know, different people get different mileage out of these shows. Andy and Bill didn't enjoy it as much as I did. I thought it was a good, solid character study, but, you know, that's all right. They can be wrong anytime they want, and you and I will be right, Ben, unless you disagree with me, and then you're going on the wrong side.
You know what I like about you, Paul? Your humility.
Yeah.
No, you got loads of that.
It's like you just turned wrestling heel all of a sudden. Calling Macho Man out to the ring.
Yeah, the quickening.
Just picturing Paul holding up the world championship title belt.
Or a Slim Jim.
In spandex.
Yeah.
Boonsula's ready.
Yeah.
Sad that these guys die so young, these wrestlers. Anyway, but he died in a car crash, so I don't think age was a factor.
Yeah, but it was possibly because of a heart attack, yeah. And then he had the car crash. I know. We're so...
Well, we do live in the world of just going off onto all sorts of topics all the time.
Well, it's sad that Dave and I were, like, pulling out the forensic report. No.
Yeah. The coroner says...
I've got the results right here.
So anyway, that's it from Ben's email, and you know, I appreciate the point of view, as always. We always appreciate the point of view, whether it agrees with me or not.
From a certain point of view.
So I think that'll do it for today's episode. Thanks, guys, for recording this with me. Thank you, everyone, for listening. What are we doing next time? Next time we'll get Andy back.
I'm here.
Why didn't you say next time?
I totally cut out. The audio cut out. Oh. We're fine.
Because we're like silence.
All right. Next time, an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Barry Magnets, Swallow the Rapture.
An ancient prophecy shocks Sisko with a powerful revelation.
For one moment,
I understood it all.
You could see the future as well as the past.
To ignore it.
These visions are gifts. I can't refuse them.
Could be catastrophic.
Locusts! They'll destroy Bajor!
To follow it.
These visions are not worth dying for.
Could prove fatal on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Ew. Is that Matthew McConaughey there?
All right.
Next time.
All right, see y'all.
Ta-da.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I missed this too.
Oh, damn it.
You know, on the one hand, I look forward to the fact that, you know, we're more than halfway to completing this series. On the other hand, I don't want it to end. So when it does, when we do get to the end of the series, I may need to come up with something else for us to do. Mm. Something.
Oh, we might do Voyager next.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Such a funny guy.